Hi, this is Dave. Welcome to A New Life Show. Today we got a special episode. We're going to dive deep into what is a virtual power plant, right? And what is a Tesla virtual power plant? What does this mean for battery day? And how can we understand Tesla energy going forward? Now, this is going to be, I think, an important video to kind of get a better sense and better clarity of what Tesla is as a company. Is it just a car company? Is it an energy company? Is it a software company? Is it a hardware company? We're going to dive into some of these questions in this live show. All right, guys. Yeah, welcome to the live chat. If you can hear this, give me a thumbs up in the live chat. And if you're watching this live, you can go ahead and join in the live chat, ask questions, or comment with other viewers. We've got a great community going here. Helping each other move forward and understand things. All right, first, let's look at what Tesla Virtual Power Plant is, right? This is actually something that's getting more information, right, as we look into it further. And I'm a big, actually, optimist and bull on this. I think this is actually huge news. I think it's underappreciated. I think there are a bunch of people who are kind of just doing more of a shallow look at it and just claiming that this is going to be this huge, you know, business all of a sudden. I think it's a slower process than what people think, but it has huge implications. So let's look at it deeper. What is a virtual power plant? Now, this is quite important. Virtual power plant, or VPP, the acronym, are cloud-based data control centers that aggregate production data from various distributed energy resources. For example, solar power plants, battery storage facilities, or residential systems connected to the grid. And then these data centers, they use communication technologies and Internet of Things sensors to gather data, which allow an operator to monitor and control the production of each plant. All right, what this means is a virtual power plant is largely a cloud-based, like, software system. It's a platform that allows lots of distributed energy resources, whether it's batteries or solar panels or different things that are connected to the grid, and allows them to control that and feed energy into the grid. Before we go into Tesla, here are kind of the main parts of a virtual power plant. So you have this control center here, right? And this control center is kind of like distributing the power and looking at, but in order to do this, they need a few functions. One is they need a demand forecast. They need to accurately kind of forecast what the demand is going to be like today, next week, next month. And this takes a lot of different algorithms to really accurately forecast this. Next is you have production forecast. You need to forecast exactly what your battery storage systems are going to be able to hold, how much energy they have, right, and where they're at. And then next is you need to be able to forecast the actual market prices for energy to know when to sell and how much you're going to sell and bid for energy, or to sell your energy for. And this control center can feed stuff into the grid, right? But it could also, let's say, pull stuff from, let's say, a solar power plant, or let's say we have vehicle to grid, right? You have Tesla cars. It pulls the energy from the Tesla cars, gives it to the grid, and it's largely using software, right? A very advanced software platform to make all this happen. All right, I've got a 45-second video that kind of gives a quick overview on what a virtual power plant is. This is not a Tesla video. It's from some SMA solar company, but it's such a clear, just a short video. I wanted to show you guys to give a better idea.
A virtual power plant is a network of interconnected power generation sources that are aggregated and controlled from a single cloud-based platform. As needed, an energy aggregator can draw or curtail power from battery storage to perform a variety of services to support grid stability. The virtual power plant can also be used to offset periods of peak demand by drawing power from grid-integrated storage systems, including electric vehicles. This incentivizes distributed power producers to participate in new energy trading markets created through virtual power plant technology, lowering costs for ratepayers. It also mitigates energy pricing volatility by offering utilities a consistent supply of energy and a predictable supply and demand forecast.
All right, so there you have it. This virtual power plant industry, there's actually a lot of companies that are in this, creating so-called virtual power plants, or these control centers, right, to control distributed resources. So Tesla is not the first one. They're actually more of a latecomer to this field. But there isn't really, I think, VPPs or virtual power plants at true scale, right? And I think Tesla is going to be the first company to actually do it. All right. We have this really interesting video I'm going to link to in the video description, or I have already linked to it. And it's a 45-minute talk or so from two software engineers from Tesla describing the virtual power plant software system in detail at a recent conference about a month ago at a QCon conference. Now, this video was great. However, it's very, very technical, right? And I think for most people who aren't into software, and even for myself, right, I run a software company, like, it's still very, very technical. And there's a lot of parts that are just like, if you don't understand this field of software, it's difficult to keep track. But what I've done is I've gone through the entire video, I've highlighted, I cut and edited just the top 8 minutes to give you a clear idea of exactly what this Tesla virtual power plant is from Tesla engineers themselves, right? So this is going to be the best source of information. So here's the 8 minute clip.
So on top of the Tesla Energy platform that Colin described, we built our first power plant type application. In this phase, we were learning how to productize real-time forecast and optimization of batteries. And in this case, we started with a single, albeit very large, battery, which was the Hornsdale battery. The Hornsdale battery was built on a tight timeline because of this famous tweet. And it's the largest battery in the world at 100 megawatts, 129 megawatt hours, which is about the size of a gas turbine. And Hornsdale helps keep the grid stable even as more renewables are coming online. And not only is it keeping the grid stable, it's actually reduced the cost to customers of doing so. And it provides it helps the grid by providing multiple kinds of services. So during extreme events, like when a generator trips offline, Hornsdale responds nearly instantaneously to balance big frequency excursions that could otherwise cause a blackout. But even during normal times, whereas a conventional generator's response lags the grid operator's signal by the order of minutes, the battery can follow the grid operator frequency regulation commands nearly instantaneously, and this helps maintain a safe grid frequency. So this big battery provides these services to the grid by way of the energy market. And why do we have to participate in an energy market? So recall the requirement that supply and demand have to be balanced in real time. Markets are an economically efficient way to make them balance. Participants bid in what they're willing to produce or consume at different price levels and at different time scales, and the operator activates the participants who can provide the necessary services at the lowest price. And if we want the battery to continually provide services to the grid and help stabilize it as more renewables come online, we need to be participating in energy markets. And in order to participate in energy markets, we need software. So to do this, we built AutoBidder to operate Hornsdale, and now we offer it as a product. This is the UI for AutoBidder. It's a pro tool that's intended for control room operators who look at it day in and day out. There's a lot of information on the screen, I know, but it's running workflows that fetch data, forecast prices, and renewable generation, and decide on an optimal bid and then submit it. And these workflows run every 5 minutes. That's the cadence of the Australian market. And at a high level, the optimization problem is trade-offs across different market products, which are different kinds of services that the battery can provide to the grid, and trade-offs in time, since the battery has a finite amount of energy. AutoBidder is built on the applications in the applications layer of the Tesla Energy platform that Colin described. And it consists of several microservices, and it interacts with both the platform and with third-party APIs. And AutoBidder is fundamentally a workflow orchestration platform. And so you might ask, why did we build our own rather than using an open source tool? The key thing is that this is operational technology. These aren't batch or offline jobs, and it's critical for financial and physical reasons that these workflows run.
So Percy just described how we leverage the platform to participate in the energy markets algorithmically with one large battery. Now we'll focus on how we extend that and use what we learn to measure, model, and control a fleet of thousands of power walls that are installed in people's homes to do peak shaving for an electrical utility. Now, before I detail the software architecture, I'll describe the problem that we're trying to solve. So this is a graph of aggregate grid load in megawatts. Now, grid load varies with weather and with time of year. This is a typical load profile for a warm summer day. The left-hand side is midnight. The minimum load is around 4 a.m. when most people are sleeping. And then peak load is around 6 p.m. when a lot of people are running air conditioning or cooking dinner. Now, peak loads are very, very expensive. The grid only needs to meet the peak load a few hours in a year. And the options for satisfying the peak load are build more capacity, which incurs significant capital costs. And then this capacity is largely underused outside of those peaks. And the other option is to import power from another jurisdiction that has excess, and this is often at a significant premium. So power can be cheaper if we can offset demand and make this load curve more uniform. And that's our objective. We want to discharge Powerwall batteries during the peak grid load, and at other times, the homeowner will use this battery for clean backup power. A lesson we quickly learned as our virtual power plants grew to thousands of Powerwalls and tens of megawatts of power was that charging the batteries back up right after the peak would lead to our own peak, defeating the purpose. And of course, the solution is to not only control when the batteries discharge, but also when they charge and spread out the charging over a longer period of time. Now, this is what we're trying to accomplish, this picture. But in reality, we don't have the complete picture. There's uncertainty. It's noon, and we're trying to predict whether or not there's going to be a peak. And we only want to discharge batteries if there's a high likelihood of a peak. Once we've decided to discharge batteries to avoid the peak, how do we control them? And I want to be very clear that we only control power walls that are enrolled in specific virtual power plant programs. We don't arbitrarily control power walls that aren't enrolled in these programs. So not every customer has this feature. As Percy mentioned, the grid's not designed to interact with a whole bunch of small players. So we need to aggregate these power walls to look more like a traditional grid asset, something like a large steam turbine. And typically, we do this by having hierarchical aggregations that are a virtual representation in cloud software. The first level is a digital twin representing an individual site. So that'll be a house with a power wall. And the next level might be organized by electrical topology, something like a substation, or it could be by geography, something like a county. The next level can again be a physical grouping, like an electrical interconnection, or it might be logical, like sites with a battery and sites with a battery plus solar that we want to control or optimize differently. And all of these sites come together to form the top level of the virtual power plant, meaning we can query the aggregate of thousands of power walls as fast as we can query a single power wall and use this aggregate to inform our global optimization. Now, it's easy to think of the virtual power plant as uniform. But the reality is more like this. There's a diversity of installations and home loads. Some homes have one battery, some have two or three. The batteries are not all fully charged. Some might be half full or close to empty, depending on home loads, time of day, solar production on that day, and the mode of operation. And there's also uncertainty in communication with these sites over the internet, as some of them may be temporarily offline. Finally, there's the asset management problem of new sites coming online regularly, firmware being non-uniform in terms of its capabilities across the whole fleet, and hardware being upgraded and replaced over time.
This distributed optimization is only possible because Tesla builds its own hardware and has full control over firmware and software. This enables quick iteration across the local and central intelligence and how they relate to each other, and this collaboration is cross-team rather than cross-company. Tesla's unique vertical hardware, firmware, software integration enables this distributed algorithm. And the vertical integration lets us build a better overall solution. We've found it very true that while the algorithms are obviously important to the virtual power plant's success, the architecture and reliability of the overall system are the key to the solution.
It's the system that allows us to provide reliable power to people who have never had it before.
Balance renewables on the grid.
Or provide flexible energy solutions for disaster relief.
And build highly integrated products and services that deliver a superior customer experience.
So we're working on a mix of the most interesting and challenging problems in distributed computing, as well as some of the most challenging and interesting problems in distributed renewable energy. We're hiring if you want to work on these challenging, important problems with us, of course.
But equally importantly, software has the potential to address many of the most pressing problems in the world, from renewable energy and climate change to food and agriculture to cancer and infectious disease research.
So let's take our talents in software engineering and work on the most important and lasting problems that we can find.
All right, so there we have a presentation by two senior software engineers at Tesla who are working on the key software that's going to enable or that has enabled virtual power plants for Tesla. Now, I want to go through the highlights. I already cut up it's a 45-minute long video, just in 8 minutes. So that was basically the highlight of the highlights. But for those people who want even more layman terms, here's what it is. First is Tesla has built software to participate in the energy markets. And so they're able to buy and sell, I guess, energy, or mostly sell because that's what they're doing with battery storage. But I guess they could also buy it when it's cheap. And by doing that, they've created kind of what they call an auto bidder software system, in which it's a bunch of algorithms. It connects market data. So it gets like, okay, what, how much are people bidding for the software? How much storage do we have, right, that we can sell? And what price should we put in our bid into the markets? Now, next, Tesla has built a distributed kind of cloud platform, where they're able to control thousands and thousands of devices, whether they be power walls or via batteries in cars. And they're able to know like which device is online, how much capacity they have, how much each individual, let's say power wall or car, needs to be discharged, when it can be discharged. And it's all aggregated in this kind of smart platform, right? And it's a very complex software problem actually they're solving. And they're pulling it all together in order to control, right, thousands and perhaps potentially millions of different devices, whether they're power walls or cars, and put them together to be energy market participants. And lastly, there's a big issue in just knowing how to scale this stuff, right? And what's interesting about kind of all this talk about vehicle to grid and virtual power plants is that it's largely a software problem on the back end, meaning there's stuff sure on the hardware side that you need, like you need the right type of cells, which is the million mile battery breakthrough, and you need the communication, right, the device to basically communicate from your batteries to this cloud system, right, of the virtual cloud center. However, the large part of it is actually a software issue, right? And I think that's what most people are missing about this vehicle to grid and virtual power plant issue. And Tesla has been working on this for actually many years, right, with Tesla Energy, and they've already got this up and running with their power walls. And I believe this, the engineers are referring to the South Australia project, where they have thousands of power walls where they're controlling as a virtual power plant already. All right, now, this is, I think, uniquely something that Tesla is able to solve, and they're able to do better than other people. Percy Link, she was one of the software engineers who gave this presentation. In the presentation, she said, Tesla builds its own hardware and has full control over firmware and software. This enables quick iteration across the local and central intelligence and how they relate to each other. And this collaboration is cross-team rather than cross-company. What she's referring to is Tesla is unique in the sense that who is making their own cars, right, and their own power walls, and gonna manufacture their own cells, and gonna have their new chemistry, right, and new manufacturing methods, and who's going to have their own home chargers for cars, and who's going to create their own solar panels, and who's going to create software to like integrate everything, and who's going to have software to, right, to participate in energy markets. It's just the amount and the ambition and the scale that Tesla has is just unmatched, right? There's no company in the world right now in the energy markets, and especially with battery storage, that is trying to do what Tesla is doing and is trying to integrate it across software and hardware. And what Percy is referring to is other people, other companies, they have to go cross company, right? Meaning they have to work with different companies who make battery storage, who make software, who make the grid connector, who make, you know, the virtual power plants, right, software platform. And there's probably like five or six companies, right, that you have to coordinate between. And can you imagine the speed or the slowness, right, of speed that it would take to coordinate between five or six companies? It's just like mind-boggling, right? What these companies, other companies can do like in 12 months, Tesla could probably do in 1 or 2 months because they just don't have the extra baggage of needing to collaborate cross-company. All right, what's interesting is Tesla has been working on the software to control remote batteries and power walls and to participate in energy markets as a virtual power plant, right? This has been going on already. And the same software can be applied to vehicles in a vehicle-to-grid situation. I think what people don't realize is everything's already kind of set, right? I mean, Tesla has already developed all the moving pieces, and it's just a matter of time before they just say, hey, here's the announcement, right? V2G is ready. Here's kind of my last slide that I want to conclude with. And the question is V2G, or vehicle to grid, ready to go? And my question, my answer is yes, right? I think this thing is ready to go. First, you've got the million-mile battery that's solving the problem of cycling, right? Because you'll need to cycle the batteries extremely more with a vehicle-to-grid situation. Next is you'll need a grid connection, right? And Tesla can solve this by providing either a grid-connected charger. I think it could be a snake charger, or it could be some other device that's connected to the grid, also to Wi-Fi to their servers. And last, Tesla needs a virtual power plant software, right? And this includes like stuff like Autobidder, and includes like their distributed cloud platform, which is able to control all these like Internet of Things or devices across, you know, the world. And all of these things are ready to go, basically. And the timing matches perfectly for Battery Day, Tesla's Battery Day coming up hopefully next month. And at Battery Day, I expect Tesla and Elon to announce the million mile battery. They're going to go into deep details on the chemistry makeup. They'll announce, I think, vehicle to grid, and they'll explain basically a lot of the stuff about what type of software they have. And the key is the benefit to the Tesla owner. I think it's going to be about $1,000 a year or so that they can get from the utilities. Now, this varies according to region and place, right? But in California, where you have a lot of stress on the utilities right now, and they're forcing rolling blackouts, and it's just like it's unreliable. I think Tesla owners in California, I think, will get probably about $1,000. Now, this is just my rough calculations. Lastly, what are the implications? I think first, Tesla cars become more attractive to buyers, because if you can actually make, let's say, $1,000, right, from your car every year, that's like pretty significant. Like that's almost like $100 off your electricity bill. And for a lot of owners, $100, that might be the full charging cost for your Tesla car, right? So in actuality, you might get free charging, right? Meaning this is like going to be a great no-brainer for a lot of people. You get free charging on your Tesla, basically, from the utilities. Maybe Elon will pitch that type of sales pitch to people. But regardless, Tesla cars become more attractive. And that means demand for the cars go up. Next, Tesla becomes a major player in the energy markets, right? So far, Tesla has kind of been more of a big player in energy storage with their battery systems, but now, and they've been experimenting with these virtual power plants, but now Tesla, with the release of potentially millions of vehicles in the future with vehicle-to-grid technology enabled, they become a major player in the energy markets. And now this starts to redefine what Tesla is, right? Is Tesla an energy company? Is it a car company? Is it an autonomous, right, AI company? And I think what Tesla is it becomes more of an ecosystem, right? And I think that's the kind of the key word here. Rather than defining Tesla as kind of a niche angle or one product, Tesla is an ecosystem of products and services that advance the transition of the world to sustainable energy, right? And this ecosystem of various products and services include vehicles, it includes AI autonomous software, right? It includes a battery power wall, it includes vehicle to grid technology, it includes solar panels, solar roof, and this fleet of products and services is probably only going to grow, right? If you think about it, like, why wouldn't, you know, Tesla like branch off to like HVAC and water heater in the car, right? If Tesla really is an ecosystem, let's say, to further and to advance the transition to sustainable energy, and if HVAC systems can actually be more efficient, right, efficiently run, and water heaters in houses with Tesla energy hooked up to solar and taking less energy, then Tesla probably will do it. So I say Tesla HVAC, you know, I call it. I estimate Tesla HVAC in 2 years, we'll see something. And it's going to fit. It's going to fit the ecosystem. And people are going to be confused. Like, what is Tesla? What is Tesla? Is this a car company? Blah, blah. And for you guys, you don't have to worry, right? Because you can just say it's the ecosystem of products and services for sustainable energy. All right. Let's do some questions. If you want to ask a question, go ahead and write a question in all caps followed by a colon sign. And I'll know that that's, you know, you're asking a question and not just saying a comment. Before we do that, actually, go ahead and give a thumbs up for the video so far, because that's going to help the algorithms. You know, let's see if actually doing a thumbs up in the middle of the video helps even more than the end of the video. And and if you've asked a question already in the video prior, go ahead and repost your question so I can take a look at it right now. All right, let me go ahead and ask answer a few questions I brainstormed myself. First, it says, how likely will Tesla announce vehicle-to-grid capability at battery day? I think it's like over 95%. I mean, this is all the pieces just line up. You know, it's either going to be at their first battery day or their second, right, part two. But I would estimate 95% or higher, right, that Tesla announces this vehicle-to-grid. I personally don't think it'll be enabled for older vehicles. I think really maybe it needs a million-mile battery. So, you know, there's still a possibility that Elon waits, right, until the million-mile battery is still in further a kind of higher production. But I don't know. It could be released first with the Model S and X, right? Maybe there's a plaid version that Tesla releases with vehicle-to-grid. Right, and maybe that's kind of the showcase that Tesla does. All right, how does Tesla benefit from releasing vehicle-to-grid to Tesla cars and owners? So I think there's a few ways Tesla can benefit. One is they could kind of take a cut, kind of a commission, you know, 10, 20, 30%, where they're the market brokers, you know, for Tesla owners. So they take a cut, and that's kind of recurring income, which could be great. And the Tesla owners can receive, you know, the remaining stuff from the utilities. Another kind of benefit, which I think probably could be actually greater, is just the increased demand for the product, right? I mean, this is just an interesting feature to be able to make, let's say, $1,000 a year off of your car and get, you know, pretty much free charging, you know, compared to driving a gas car, right, where you're paying like $200, $300, even more per month, let's say, on gas. And so I think this, just the demand for Tesla to sell millions and more cars, I think is going to be tremendous. And I think lastly, Tesla benefits from this virtuous cycle where they release this product, it gets, you know, more sales, they pump it into R&D, right, to get even better batteries, better technology, better software, and then it improves their products, right? And those improvements lead to greater sales, right? And it's just this virtual cycle that is hard to break, especially when you've got an ecosystem, right, of collaborative kind of complementing products that Tesla has. All right, let's hit some user question, viewer questions here. And all right, Ben says, will the launch schedule for next Wednesday have any effects on Tesla stock, be it successful or success or failure? I'm assuming you're talking about the SpaceX launch. Yeah, I think this is the big launch, right, that's coming up, if I'm correct. Is it the manned launch? Actually, I'm not like completely following SpaceX as closely as probably you guys, some of you guys. But yeah, we hope it goes well. If it doesn't, it could be, sure, I think Tesla could be hit short term a bit. But yeah, if it doesn't go well, then it's, I think Tesla stock price is the least of our concerns, right? There's human life involved. Also, you know, SpaceX is kind of, will take a hit, and it'll take some time to recover for SpaceX. Tomer says, do you think Tesla will charge for V2G or will it be free to owners? Yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, I think on one hand, Tesla could just do an upfront fee, like charge like $2,000, $3,000 as an option, vehicle to grid option. That could help their margins per car. Or they could just kind of give it for free and, you know, take a cut on the commission side and the back end. Regardless, there's going to be still a cost involved with kind of having this grid connection device installed and the utility coming out. There's going to be costs for permitting based upon the local city and stuff. So this isn't kind of like a simple thing to do. I think it's the rollout's going to be a bit slow. It's going to be a bit complicated. It deals with local permits. It deals with utilities getting involved. The utilities are motivated. It's just, it's going to take some time. Long term, though, this is very, very bullish. All right, is million mile battery really needed for V2G? What if there are not just 1 million cars plugged in, but 100 million cars plugged in the future? Yeah, I think the million mile battery, I mean, you could probably do V2G with, you know, not the million mile battery. It's just that you get, you know, faster degradation of the battery, which, you know, Tesla doesn't really want you to have, because then you have like battery warranty issues. So Tesla is just kind of being cautious, I think, and conservative, wanting the million mile battery. Who knows, they could enable it for people who don't have the million mile battery, but I'm kind of doubtful for that. And what if there's not just 1 million, but 100 million cars plugged in the future? Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a huge worldwide battery that's controlled by, right, intelligent software that's able to, you know, move that energy anywhere that the grid is connected to. Ben says, can this scale? Can they become a full-blown power utility company, not just during the peak hours? Yeah, I don't know if they need to be, per se, the power company, because then you have to, like, I think, upkeep all the utility lines and, you know, if you're actually in charge of the grid, right? I mean, that's just a painful process. I was looking at PG&E, trying to understand their financials a little bit yesterday, and it's like, yeah, it's like they're kind of in a rough spot financially, it seems like. So I think just Tesla being a participant in the energy markets, controlling access to a ton of batteries, right? The utilities really need to regulate, right, their grid, I think is just an amazing value proposition that Tesla has. And it's not just in the US, it's around the world. Marty T says, will large trucking companies make millions more a year while their fleet of Tesla semis charge up overnight? Yeah, I think vehicle to grid, though, I mean, I'm not sure if I understand your question correctly, but vehicle to grid is really not for robotaxis or Tesla semis. These guys need to charge and drive, right? Vehicle to grid is more for those who don't drive most of the time, who just like sit at home or sit at work, right, your vehicle. That's what vehicle to grid is for. And that's, you know, because you need time on the grid and you need to be able to be discharged and stuff. Mark Patty says, how long do you think it'll be until Tesla is no longer battery constrained? Yeah, I think this is an interesting question. I think it all depends on how quickly they ramp up their million mile battery production. And it seems like, you know, they have a lot of demand for Model Y, a lot of demand for Cybertruck. And once they ramp up their million mile battery and lower the costs, I think it's going to enable the Gen 4 car, like a $25,000 car coming out first out of China. And then you're going to have a ton more demand for that, right? And so it continues to go on. There'll be probably, you know, it's ebbs and flows. Like it's going to be sometimes, you know, if it's delayed, then there might be some, you know, kind of time where we're sure they're not battery constrained. But I think long term, Tesla is in a great place. All right, Crazy Fool says, could Tesla connect different continents on a single virtual grid? America, Australia could support each other day, night, summer, winter. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the technicalities. My understanding, these grids are very kind of, they're highly regulated industries, and they don't do well crossing countries unless it's like really regulated, which, you know, but yeah, I doubt Tesla would be getting involved with that. Martin Ng says, do we all know when battery day will be? Well, we know probably the part one will be next month virtually, and then part two will be in person, you know, maybe in Texas, maybe like a month or two after that. That's kind of Elon's current thoughts on that. Mobit Grip says, will Cybertruck have the million mile battery? Yes, definitely. The million mile battery is going into Cybertruck. Pablo says, will Tesla go into mining? Yeah, someone was commenting on one of my last videos that lithium might not, you know, have enough ample supply worldwide if Tesla builds terafactories. And I think it's probably not just lithium, right? I think there are probably a few other probably key elements, I'm guessing. And in that case, yeah, Tesla probably would rather get into long-term contracts, meaning just really fork over some money to, you know, secure prices long-term, etc., rather than getting to mining themselves. If Tesla has to do it, you know, they'll do it. They'll do whatever it takes to get into mining, or not to get, but to get batteries, right? To build batteries. All right, Kyle says, electric jet announced at battery day, calling it now. Yeah, I think we're a little bit far off from that. And if it was announced at battery day, they would call it something else than battery day, I think. Question, do you see Tesla licensing this technology to other EV autos? No, it's just too complex, right? This thing is such a monster in terms of complexity. Like you need the right cell chemistry, you need the right cell manufacturing, you know, plans, you need the right vehicle, the right inverter, you need the right software, you need the right grid connection, you need just like so many moving parts. It's just like, yeah, it's not something I think Tesla is going to license to other EV autos makers, because they can't even do it. Even if Tesla licensed to these other automakers, they don't know even how to do it. So yeah, Graham Brown, is virtual power plant running in South Australia? That's my understanding, that in South Australia there's a fleet of some thousands of power walls, and they are running this virtual power plant software at this moment. All right, Ludovic says, when do you think the market will start to fully grasp the implication of this ecosystem? Yeah, you know, the market typically is all about numbers, looking out 1 or 2 years. I mean, that's my personal opinion. And I think this whole ecosystem doesn't really make sense, because it's not like next year's revenues is going to be completely different because of this, let's say, let's say V2G or a virtual power plant. I think though overall, and also this whole concept I'm pitching of this ecosystem of products, right? I think it doesn't make sense, right, for these numbers, the quantitative folks who are really into numbers. They're like, what are you talking about, an ecosystem, right? They want something more tangible. But I think for Elon, he's able to manage this because it all makes sense to him, right? He has an end goal, and all of these products and services, right, combine, and they feed off of each other. They get synergy off of each other to make each other's products better. Right? For example, cell research helps the cars, helps the battery packs, it helps, you know, vehicle to grid. Software helps, you know, autonomy, helps, you know, distributed energy, it helps all sorts of stuff. All of this stuff is interrelated. And so, yeah, Tesla in 5 or 10 years, right, their ecosystem is just going to grow, I think, and become more complex and more compelling over time. All right, Riyad says, will Tesla stop building gigafactories and start building terafactories as a better option? Yeah, I think Elon mentioned terafactories. We're going to have more information at the battery day. I'm starting to think, you know, maybe it can be a combination, right? There could be some smaller factories and kind of a big factory to begin with, because, yeah, it's going to be hard to scale like multiple terafactories immediately. All right, Dean says, do you think the Boring Company will get involved running power lines underground? Yeah, I don't think Tesla is a power company, meaning they don't want to be in charge of the grid, like maintaining electric lines. Like, I've heard some of these electric companies, like let's say PG&E, they just haven't been maintaining their electric lines over time. And it's just a major liability, right? That's one of the reasons why supposedly they have these rolling blackouts to avoid forest fires or just fires, right? And it's a huge thing. They're in major lawsuits. So I don't know if Tesla really wants to get into it. All right, Psycho Gamer says, do you think Tesla would need more hardware to actually achieve full self-driving, or do you believe we already have all we need in cars today? Yeah, so I have a December 2017 Model 3 with the hardware, and I have the full self-driving option, so I need to upgrade my computer to 3.0. And I think actually, yeah, my computer or my car will be able to do full self-driving, but it's not like a yes or no, black and white. It's, I think, shades of gray. And I think it becomes an issue of like, how many times safer than a typical human do you want to be or need to be? And I think maybe the current system, hardware 3.0, gets us maybe 2 or 3, you know, 4 times safer. But I think if we really want to get up to, let's say, 10 times safer than a human being, we need hardware 4.0 or even later. And this is going to be a new computer chip, you know. The cycle time seems to be every about 2.5 years or 3 years where Tesla can actually release an upgraded chip. And so, yeah, it's going to be shades of gray. The older cars, you know, will be able to do, you know, different levels of full self-driving. But over time, they're going to be, I think, antiquated in the sense that newer cars, the hardware 4.0 or later on 5.0, will just be so much safer. People will prefer that over time. All right, would love to see Tesla Energy replace PG&E, but there's long-term danger of Tesla turning into a monopolistic utility, PG&E version 2.0. Yeah, someone was asking, like, in comments, asking me, like, hey, should Tesla buy PG&E, which is the Northern California utility company? And I was looking into it about, like, 30 minutes. I'm like, oh, I don't think so. You know, they just don't want all of the mess that it takes to upgrade and keep up all the lines, right? That's just crazy. All right. All right, BSG74 says, any of this will change the future for Powerwalls, higher or lower price, no longer making them? Yeah, I think the Tesla Powerwalls get the million mile battery as well. Maybe Tesla's already starting to manufacture them, I don't know. And they'll start to expand their capabilities, I think, you know, similar to what a V2G could do, right? Get more into the cycling. I think there's always going to be, you know, some room and some features for Powerwall. I don't think it's a dying business. It's definitely a growing business over time, even with vehicles. All right, guys, this has been a great live stream with you guys. I hope this has been helpful. For me personally, these videos are more about sharing the process. I don't claim to like kind of know it all in terms of, I'm not coming up with these super polished videos where I know everything about V2G or virtual power plant. I'm kind of sharing my research along the way. And I want you guys to be aware of that I don't have the answers. And this is a process. And I'm trying to help everyone kind of have clearer thinking. And by showcasing and sharing my thinking process, I'm hoping you guys can benefit. Also, I'm learning a ton from you guys through the questions and through the comments, and it's really helping me along in my investment process as well. Over the past few weeks, people have asked, like, you know, what type of other stocks are on my watch list and stuff. And so I want to start getting to some more of those videos. I've been kind of reserved because I don't want to just pitch some stocks without, you know, giving some, you know, better analysis on why I've been watching certain stocks, right? But it's like, I think I should have probably just shared the stocks I was buying or watching a while back so you guys can be kept in the loop. But I want to do that more. I bought, like, you know, a month and a half ago or so, I bought like stocks in, or I bought some stock in Square, in Facebook, in Amazon, in Shopify, in Fiverr, in Cloudflare, and Elastic, which is a cloud computing company, and several more companies that I've been just watching over time. And I didn't put in a ton of money in these stocks. I kind of wanted just to put in something where I had some stake so it can motivate me to keep up to date and to research further in these companies that I thought were interesting. And I want to kind of go into kind of why I think some of these companies are interesting. It's kind of tricky because the market has bounced so fast, right? Faster than I expected. And it's like, I don't want to pump any stocks that I think are just kind of like ridiculously high and I'm not buying anyways. But so I want to kind of be transparent with that. I do think personally the market in some stocks, right, are just kind of like, I don't understand what's going on, right? And I'm okay with missing out because, you know, 90% plus my portfolio is in Tesla long term, right? And that's really not changing, at least in the short term. With my cash, I'm able to move in and out. I have some other opportunities. I have this belief that there's always going to be great investment opportunities for those who are patient and those who kind of look and search for these opportunities. And so even if I miss some opportunity on some company I didn't put enough into this time around, I'll keep on searching. I'll trust the process that more opportunities will come up. It doesn't even have to be stocks, you know, it could be a business, it could be something else. And that's kind of how I flow as an investor. So anyways, I hope this whole time has been helpful. If you haven't, please hit the like button. That helps the algorithms again. Please subscribe to the channel if you haven't. That helps as well. And we'll see you guys in my next video. Thanks a lot.